This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you this morning?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Good. First of all, let's start off by wishing all the mothers out there a fantastic Mother's Day. So to all the mothers, have a happy Mother's Day. I know, Naz, you would like to give your regards, so I'll turn it over to you for that.
Happy Mother's Day, especially my wife, Mary Lane. Thanks for being a great mother.
Yeah, I'm surrounded by mothers today, my mother, my mother-in-law, my wife, my daughter, and I know, Naz, you've got a grandchild on the way, so you're going to be an addition, a mother addition to your family in the coming year as well, and that's a blessing. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Can't wait.
And talking about blessings, we're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Been a while since he's been with us. It's Sportsnet's Matt Marchese. I guess I'm surrounded by the Marchese family today, and that's certainly a privilege for me. Matt, how are you today?
Well, lucky for you, you get surrounded by the Marchese. Usually we try and get away from ourselves.
As I said, I think I'm the ham in the sandwich today, but I've never met two more passionate sports guys than Naz and Matt and while I'm on that topic of Marchese's, there wasn't a more fanatic sports fan than your grandfather, Matt, Naz's father. We spent a lot of time in the living room over at your grandparents' place in the 70s, fighting Toronto Maple Leaf battles. So I'm thrilled that I've got both of you guys on today. Matt, we've got you for the first half of the hour. Second half of the hour, we're going to be talking 1972 Summit Series with Scott Morrison, acclaimed sports journalist. Book has been released in 1972, the series that changed hockey forever. 50th anniversary is coming up in September this year, and we'll get a chance to talk to Scott and his book about that later on in the hour. Every Sunday, we start off, Matt and Naz, we say, what happened to the Leafs in the last week? I can't say it was a pretty good week for the Leafs, Naz, wasn't it?
A pretty good week, for sure.
Certainly, yeah. When we left the show off last Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, if we had have said the Leafs would be ahead 2-1 in the series, I don't think anybody would have said we would have been unhappy about that. So, Naz, let's break down the Leafs week. Awesome performance in Game 1. Not the greatest in Game 2. I think they got a little bit mentally unhinged or unfocused, but certainly hung in there in Game 3. First to you, Naz, and then to you, Matt. Overall, from a general perspective, your assessment of the Leafs' first three games.
Naz? Very surprised at Tampa Bay that they look so slow out there. I didn't think the Leafs were that quick, but it looks like they are that quick, and they're going to have trouble maintaining that. And I think Tampa Bay's going to be out of it by the time next week comes around.
You're the eternal optimist, Naz, and thankfully for that. Matt, break it down. First three games, are the Leafs where you thought they were going to be when we started the series? Is this panning out the way you would have anticipated, Matt?
I don't think anybody could have anticipated that the Leafs would have been the dominant team for seven periods for sure, but you could make the argument for eight, because I thought that they were the better team in the first period of Game 2 outside of that late goal that proved to be a killer for them. And I thought they were the better team in the third period of that game as well. So Tampa really, they look different. They don't look like the same dominant team. Andrei Vasilevskiy has looked human at points, which is something that we haven't seen too much over the course of the previous two playoffs. And even with his number, and we're going to hear a lot about it today before the game, you know, Tampa Bay is 15-0 in their last 15 games coming off of a loss, and Andrei Vasilevskiy's goals against average is under 2. And we can look at those stats, but the Leafs still managed to get 3 past him, and they were still in the game despite being down 5-1 in the third period. I just think that when you look at how the Leafs have played, they've played their own game, and I think that's the biggest difference from previous years, is that they're not trying to be different. They are playing a little bit more physically, but their defense is better than it has been in previous years, but they're not trying to change their style. They're still trying to play fast, which is why I give Sheldon Keith credit for bringing Jason Spezza into the lineup and keeping Pierre Engvall in the lineup and dropping him down to the fourth line to play with speed and not have to worry about, you know, having rough and tumble guys in the lineup. Because, listen, if you're trying to match up with the other team's fourth line, they've already beaten you. And that's what happened in game 2, I found. And Sheldon Keefe learned from his mistake, and now the Leafs are up 2-1. I think the biggest surprise through the series is that we can say that Jack Campbell has largely outplayed Andrei Vasilevskiy, and I don't think that anybody thought that that was going to happen by the time game 4 rolled around.
No question about Jack Campbell. He's done so far in the first 3 games what Leafs fans and what Leafs Nation needs him to do. And as you point out, Matt, you know, if he can goaltend to a draw with Vasilevskiy, you know, that would be that's a ticket to victory. But you know, he's gone beyond that so far. I will say, as a Leafs fan and part of Leafs Nation, having been through what we've been through in the last 7 years, I am still a little bit nervous. Not a little bit, quite a bit. You know, it's only 2-1, but we want to be positive, and that's certainly, we don't want to dwell on any negatives. And there's still a lot of hockey to be played. And as you pointed out, Matt, you've got that statistic that Tampa has not lost 2 in a row. I think it's the last 15 or the last 16. And I think at some point in this series, if the Leafs are going to have to win this series, they're going to have to break that stat. To go alternate. I think that's creating a thin margin of error. So we'd like to see that broken tonight. Naz, bottom line, the Leafs third and fourth line, the guys down there, Mikheyev, Engvall, Blackwell, Kamp, they've brought it. They are the key to the series right now. They are the reason, together with Campbell and a defense that's tightened up, the reason the Leafs are ahead in the series. Your thoughts on the performance of the bottom end of the Leafs lineup rather than the top end?
Yeah, they've really performed well. Tavares and Nylander haven't performed that well, but they pick up the slack for sure. The one thing that really surprised that the refs are calling everything, and if that's the case, the Leafs' advantage is definitely there for them to take the series.
We're talking also today with Matt Marchese from Sportsnet. Matt, Naz just alluded to the performance of Tavares and Nylander. You know, obviously because the Leafs are ahead 2-1, they are, you know, Leafs are winning, and I would say, in spite of the fact that they're not really producing offensively, although they are contributing, obviously hockey's more than just an offensive game, and they're contributing in a lot of different ways. I really see the Leafs' ultimate success in the rest of this series. Tavares and Nylander got to start finding the net. Any comments on that, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we're trying to be positive here, the Leafs are up 2-1. They've gone 2-for-15 on the power play in this series. And John Tavares and William Nylander have not scored a goal. And they have not performed. And frankly, I thought William Nylander's best game was the game that he had food poisoning. So, and that was game 1. John Tavares just looks a step slow. And I know that this is the exact same player that we've seen throughout the season. John Tavares has never been the fleetest of foot. We know that. But it seems right now that he's not getting into the areas that make him successful fast enough. He's not getting to the front of the net fast enough where he can tip pucks. He's not getting into the zone and hounding defensemen for pucks. It's just there's something off in his game. But if you can say that two of your top four forwards haven't produced a drop yet, and you're up 2-1, and your power play hasn't been good, and one of the two goals that you scored on the power play was on a 5-on-3, I think there's lots of room for optimism, because to me, that says that even though Tampa probably hasn't played their best in this series, that the Leafs can still get a little bit more out of those two guys to take some of the pressure off the top guys. Listen, the bottom six has been beyond incredible. I don't think you can ask for any better than they've played. David Camp has been great. He's got two goals, which I don't think anybody saw, because he was a black hole on offense for the last season. And you get some production out of Mikheyev. You get him in on the forecheck. And I really loved the Colin Blackwell addition when they made it. And I think we need to give credit to the Leafs defense, because when we look at this group, it is the best group of defensemen that this Leafs team has had in probably 20 years, because they have eight guys that can play on any night that are legit NHL defensemen, and not, you know, a guy like Martin Marincin, who's not an NHL defenseman.
Don't go there, please. That's bad karma.
But this team was, they said that the depth was going to shine through, and that's what's happened. They have defensemen who are NHL defensemen and forwards who are NHL forwards that can't get into the lineup. And that's been crucial, because you can make your maneuvers with your lineup and you can tinker with things. They're going to go with the same lineup again tonight is my guess. I don't think we're going to see Timothy Liljegren after Justin Hall played the other night and they won. You don't mess with a winning lineup. But I'm curious to see how Tampa answers, because, you know, they had that same third line with Yanni Gourde and Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow, and everybody talked about how great it was, and, oh, well, they can just recreate it. Sometimes you need guys to play together for a while, and that third line hasn't been together enough to create chemistry, and I think the Leafs have been able to take advantage of that.
Looked back on the three games, and there's a couple of key moments in this series that I hope the Leafs can continue in that same vein, for lack of a better term. And it struck me that this is a different Leafs team. They're better prepared. The players are, there's a better fit amongst the players. And I thought, if there's a turning point in the series, it came pretty early in this series. They killed off that 5-minute major in game one. Not only did they kill it off, they had all the best scoring chances. And I'm watching them kill off. And I said, when they got that 5-minute major, I just looked at it. I said, oh, my God, here we go again. Tampa's going to score two goals. Game's over. And we're behind the eight ball. But man, they were just a different team on killing that one, and in game three, Naz, they have a 3-0 lead. They got things in hand. They the Tampa scratches back with a goal, then they scratch back with another goal, and the fans are going wild. And they got every reason to fold, perhaps like they have in the past. And, Marner rings one off the post, but Matthews got a breakaway. Marner rings it off the post and the crossbar on the same shot. It could have been 4-1, and then it's 3-2, and they got to hang on for almost the entire third period. And they did. And Campbell, made the save of his, against Stamkos, I believe. Remarkable. I got a sense maybe this team is psychologically in a better place than previous Leafs teams. Naz?
I agree, and Marner's been fantastic out there. He's been the MVP of the series so far, and if he continues this play, he's going to be a main asset for the Leafs going down the stretch to the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, certainly Marner and Matthews. At this time, I think it's we'll take a break. Matt, you're going to stick with us for a few more minutes after the break?
Sure thing.
Absolutely. We'll come go to break. We'll be right back, and we'll talk some more NHL playoffs. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we realised that our extra-large pizza is 2 whole inches longer than the so-called extra-large from the big pizza conglomerates. How do they even call theirs extra-large when Pizzaville gives you 18 whopping inches, steaming hot? Because, let's be honest, who wouldn't want 2 more inches?
Pizzaville Stone-Baked Pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity in Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery, now open at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
To become a champion in business, it takes coaching, training, and bench strength. And every team needs a skilled player like KPMG Enterprise for private companies. KPMG Enterprise helps entrepreneurs and family businesses grow, strengthen, and transition by offering a full suite of services, including audit, accounting, tax, and advisory. Your business doesn't stand still. It evolves. Team up with a winner. Visit kpmg.ca/enterprise. Let's do this.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM, live streaming on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to have join us this morning, Sportsnet's Matt Marchese. Guys, we're talking about the Leafs. You know, we thought at the beginning the keys to the series would be obviously Matthews and Marner being unshackled. They were sort of held pretty closely last year by the Canadians. That has panned out. The bottom six in this lineup has panned out. Tavares and Nylander, they're doing their job, perhaps from a defensive point of view. We need them to start cashing in. Campbell was a question mark. He's answered all the questions so far. If he can keep it going at the level, he's going to keep it going. Certainly, Leafs are looking pretty good. And the other area we thought might be an area that might not hold up was the defense. So far, so good. Giordano has made a huge difference back there. He's steadied that second pairing and has made everybody better in a lot of different ways. Defense wise, Naz, and then I'll turn it over to you, Matt. So far, so good on the back end. That was certainly a concern. Justin Holst still makes me nervous when he's out there. But overall, can't be critical. Can't be too critical of the back end, can we, Naz?
Yeah, the Leafs played without Muzzin most of the year. And Muzzin has been very good back there. Very aggressive, hard on the puck, and he kills penalties very well. And I like their defense. I think the defense is as good as Tampa Bay's right now.
Matt, defense was a concern. It's been a concern for the Leafs for years. But overall, you know, I mean, you get good goaltending and you get responsibility from your forwards. That makes playing D a lot easier. And D's a lot easier when you're trying to simplify the game and not trying to be fancy and keep it out, you know, get it out around the boards, not dump it in the middle. Are you impressed with the Leafs D so far in this series, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody thought to this point that would have been a strong suit for this team, especially when we look at how this team has played defensively at times during the year, I agree that Mark Giordano was a really solid addition to the team. He's got experience, and that's the one thing when we talk about Mark Giordano. It's not a guy that was drafted in the OHL. He wasn't drafted in the NHL. He had to ply his trade in the AHL and then go to the KHL before making an impact at the NHL level. He's played over 1,000 games. He's won a Norris Trophy. He's kind of been at every single level that you can be at, and he can relate to anybody on the roster. So I think he's been a great influence on this group, and he's played really well too. Like, let's not forget that. And Jake Muzzin, like my dad mentioned, I don't think anybody thought that he was going to be as good as he's been, because in the games that he played in coming off of injury in the regular season before the playoffs started, he wasn't very good. And he's just ramped his play up to a totally different level. We haven't even talked about Morgan Rielly or TJ Brody in this conversation either. And those are the guys that they rely on to be, you know, their anchors on the back end. I think a lot of teams around the league, even though they may not have the superstar cachet, like, Riley's not among the elite, but he's probably in that second tier of defensemen, the very good defenseman group. So they don't have the superstar guy like Victor Hedman who can play 28, 30 minutes a night. But they have balance, and I think that's what's been the biggest difference from years past, is that they can throw out any pair at any moment, and they're going to be fine, and you can trust them. I think that the way that the team has played defensively has helped Jack Campbell. If you guys notice, there's not a lot of second-chance scoring opportunities for Tampa Bay. It's one save and frozen, or one save into the board, or one save and out. And I think that's been the biggest key, because as we've seen in this series, Tampa has not shied away from driving to the net and trying to get in Jack Campbell's kitchen. But when they do, there's nothing there. There's no cookies there for them lying in front of the net. And I think that's been a huge key to this series, that the forwards have been good. We've seen Austin Matthews on a back check on Steven Stamkos. We've seen how the Leafs have been very active in their own zone. And the penalty kill has been very good. When you can create as many opportunities, if not more, than the opposing team when they're on the power play, when you're on the penalty kill, I think that's been a huge difference in this series. And I think that's the biggest reason for optimism, because even in the 5-3 loss in Game 2, Tampa Bay scored 3 power play goals. So it's not as if it was because the defense was so awful or the goaltending was so awful. It's because the Leafs gave up. They took too many stupid penalties, and their penalty killers were tired out because they seemingly happened all in the second period. So I think that the way that this group has played defensively is a huge positive, and it's a reason for optimism throughout the rest of the series.
We're talking to Matt Sportsnet's Matt Marchese. Real quickly, guys, we've got to go to break in a couple of minutes. Game 4 for the Leafs tonight in Tampa. A lot of series around the a lot of other playoff hockey going on. Comments on a couple of series here. Panthers, President's Cup trophy winners, looks like the jinx is hitting them. Didn't look that great yesterday. Got blown out by Washington. They're down 2-1 against the Capitals. And the Avalanche look like they could be, they're going to be around for a long playoff run. Really quickly, guys, first you, Nez, and then Matt. Any comments on what's going on around the rest of the league? Any surprises? Anything that you noticed your attention?
I'm very surprised at Florida getting beat 6-1 yesterday, and I'm really shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if Washington won that series now, but I can't believe that Florida played that badly yesterday.
Yeah, Matt.
The Florida thing is bizarre to me, but somebody made the point earlier this week on one of the shows that I was producing, and they said Florida looks like the team that Washington used to be, that high-octane offense that was great in the regular season, and once they got to the playoffs, they couldn't get over that hump, and they needed to learn how to lose before they won. And that's the feeling that I get with that Florida team, even though they're incredibly gifted offensively. They've showed their worth, and Peter Laviolette, frankly, has outcoached Andrew Burnett through the first two games. Colorado is just a juggernaut right now. I feel bad for Nashville because without UC Saros, they didn't really stand a chance anyway. And game two was, you know, the big story was Connor Ingram because he made 49 saves. But the young goalie going in, he's playing with house money, and then the house of cards came tumbling down yesterday because Colorado is just too good. Feel bad for Nashville, but somebody's got to win and somebody's got to lose. And those two, you know, and the last one that I'll get to, I am absolutely stunned that Pittsburgh has won two of three games with a third string goalie. And that I can't believe, like, I don't, Louis Domingue is a journeyman goalie for a reason. And Pittsburgh has just found a way to play in front of him, whether it be in the overtime in game one, where he came in and made 17 saves and the game went to triple overtime, or yesterday's game where they put up a seventh spot on the Rangers and they chased Igor Shesterkin, who's been the best goalie all year, and they chased him from the game and then lit up Alexander Georgiev. That series just has the makings of going seven, and it would be a big, big loss for the Rangers if they can't get out of the first round against that aging Penguins team.
Certainly would. We've been had the privilege of chatting with Sportsnet's Matt Marchese this morning. Matt, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Anytime. And, Dad, I will see you later.
Okay, there he is.
That was Matt Marchese. Coming up in the next segment of the hour, the book is called 1972, The Series That Changed Hockey Forever. It's acclaimed sports journalist Scott Morrison will be talking about the Summit Series. Santiago, our producer, if you can play that clip before we go to break, I'll cue you now. Go ahead, please.
1 minute left to go, a 5-5 tie. This is the tie-breaking game. It couldn't get it any closer. Savard at his own blue line, turning around with Pat Stapleton coming out. Stapleton's pass on an open wing, but here's Cornwallier coming up for it. A long shot in off the stick of Esposito. Vasiliev goes back of the net, Cornwallier steals it. A pass in front, Henderson was upended as he tried to shoot it. Here's another shot, Henderson right in. He scores!
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared,
"We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
To become a champion in business, it takes coaching, training, and bench strength. And every team needs a skilled player like KPMG Enterprise for private companies. KPMG Enterprise helps entrepreneurs and family businesses grow, strengthen, and transition by offering a full suite of services, including audit, accounting, tax, and advisory. Your business doesn't stand still. It evolves. Team up with a winner. Visit kpmg.ca/enterprise. Let's do this.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery, now open at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Last minute of play in the game.
Unlike sports, the outcome of palliative care isn't determined in the dying seconds. Physically, socially, and spiritually, palliative care is giving someone the best quality of life for however long life remains, while supporting their loved ones. All services are free of charge with partial government funding. The need for palliative care is great. Making an Impact is the newly opened Hospice Vaughan Mario and Nick Cortolucci Hospice Palliative Care Center of Excellence. A truly amazing 10-bed residence, the first palliative care hub in Vaughan. If you share the belief that everyone deserves to live until they die, get involved. Volunteer your time or donate to hospicevaughan.com. We are for community, by community. And together, we are here to serve.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in two words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Here, at the end of 27 astounding days, there's time for one more moment to define the heart and character of Canadian hockey.
Canadian team went into a hot flare, which seemed to be a little unusual. 1:02 left in the game. Stapleton, he cleared to the open wing to Cornwallier. Cornwallier took a shot, the defenseman fell over. The Afghans lead. Cornwallier has it on that wing. Here's the shot! Henderson made a wild stab towards Bell. Here's another shot, right by the door! Henderson has scored for Canada! Henderson, right in front of the net!
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We're pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour acclaimed sports journalist Scott Morrison. The book is 1972, the series that changed hockey forever. And Scott, welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Good morning, and we just got an opportunity. We always take the opportunity if we can. We've talked about the series on the show quite a few times over the times we've been on the air. We always take an opportunity to play the Foster Hewitt call, and this morning we decided to play the Bob Cole call as well, the one that was broadcast on the radio all over the world, the one that people aren't that as familiar. Scott, it's 50 years ago, September 28th of this fall. Are you surprised that this resonates so much still with Canadian hockey fans? You're on Zoomer Radio this morning. Most of our listeners were alive when the series played. Naz and I, we remember where we were. We're actually a little bit older than you, Scott, a little bit. But are you surprised that this resonates so strongly 50 years later?
Not really. I mean, hockey is our game, and hockey is what Canadians are all about. And I think it just speaks to the impact and the significance and the magnitude of that series and how it affected the game on so many levels, how it changed hockey forever, as we say in the title, and how it impacted Canadians in the day. And it created the Henderson goal, created a "where were you" moment for people of that vintage in this country. And, you know, you think about Americans and then maybe their "where were you" moment is a, you know, an assassination of a president or the man on the moon, that type of thing. But for Canadians, for us, it's a goal, and a goal that meant a lot to a country that was, you know, struggling a little bit at the time and needed a feel good moment and got one.
I'll turn it over to my co-host, Naz. Naz?
How important was the line of Henderson, Clark, and Ellis in that series? Because they weren't supposed to make the team, as I recall.
No, they were late choices. You know, they had a 35-man roster, and that was essentially because they didn't have any other team that they could play during training camp to for exhibition games. So they had to have inter-squad games, and they were late additions. They were all very good players in the NHL, but there wasn't the expectation by any stretch of the imagination that they were going to step in and have an impact on the series. But it's the three of them got together on the first day of camp, and they were put together, and Henderson and Ellis, of course, played together with the Maple Leafs, and they went and had lunch, and they all sort of said to each other, you know, we really want to make this team, so let's get this job done. Let's be intense. Let's not a lot of the players came in thinking, obviously, that the series was going to be a lark, a walk over the Soviets, and they didn't take training camp seriously, and they did. And that's the only line that was together from the start to finish in the tournament. Every other line got moved around. Players were moved around in and out of the roster, but they were kept intact because they were so good. And from the first game, Harry Sinden, once he realized and saw how good the Soviets were and how some of the players were more dangerous than others, he assigned that line to the Harlamov line, and we all know what happened in Game 6. But so that line was impactful in many different ways.
We're talking to Scott Morrison. Scott, you know, we talk about the "where were you" moment, and that certainly, I certainly recall where I was. Naz certainly recalls where he was. All of my cohorts and all of my contemporaries remember where they were. Where were you, Scott?
Well, I was 13 going on 14 about a couple weeks later, and my parents were kind enough to let me stay at home. Three of the four games were on weekdays, school days, and I stayed home for the final three. And I just remember when Henderson scored, and then, of course, you got 34 seconds to tick off the clock, and that was nerve-wracking. You go from elation to nervousness one more time, and then finally when the buzzer goes, I just know a bunch of my friends, my buddies, we all just spilled out of our homes and onto the street, and all of a sudden a ball hockey game broke out, which seemed, when you look back, so typically Canadian and the right thing to do at the time to celebrate. And we're high-fiving, and the next thing you know, we're playing. And the team that got the short straw, they had to be the Soviets.
Naz?
What was the turning point in the series, Scott?
I think the turning point really was after that Vancouver game, and in part it was the Phil Esposito speech, but not that that impacted the players, because most of them didn't hear it at the time. But it certainly changed the mindset of, I think, the fans and the country, in that he told them point blank that this wasn't about the Canadians underachieving, you know, one win in those first four games. It was the other guys are really good, and we all underestimated them. We're sold a bill of goods, perhaps, whatever you want to call it, but the other guys are really good, and we're doing our best. And I think the country, instead of being angry and bailing and support with the team, started to figure it out themselves a little bit, and there was a lot more support by the time they got to Moscow. And then that week away to get out of the country, get away from the noise, and they spent a week in Sweden, played a couple exhibition games. And that's when the team finally came together. And I think it was the understanding of how deep they were in terms of the predicament of being behind the Soviets. Their pride was on the line. Their reputations were on the line. And I think they really started to feel like they were playing for the country at that point. And they were that team was, 10 different NHL teams were represented. And back in the day, the players didn't fraternize the way they do today. And they didn't like each other. If you were a Ranger, you didn't like a Boston player. And if you're Toronto, you didn't like Montreal, and vice versa. And so they were kind of forced to come together at that point. And I think they had some really good talks and good moments together. And they realized that they were playing for that maple leaf on the front of their sweater. And there was a lot on the line at that point, not just hockey pride, but national pride.
Scott, we all live through this, but there's a whole series of generations of Canadians and Canadian hockey fans that didn't live through it. And you certainly in your book, and I read the book, and congratulations, it's a wonderful, wonderful book. Brings back so many vivid memories, and the way you capture some of the scenes is pretty remarkable. Do the younger generations really, when you talk to them about it, do they really understand? Can they sort of grasp what we went through? It wasn't just the hockey series; it was a cultural war. The Russians had invaded Czechoslovakia in 1968. There's so many things going on in the world. Do you get a sense that through your work and through passing these stories on, what the younger generation's perspective on the series is?
I don't think they can fully appreciate it. I mean, the people that I talk to, and I've talked to students in high schools and whatnot over the years, and they certainly want to know about it. And I think eventually we'll appreciate that it was, the world was a much different place. And that's hard when you're not of the vintage. It's hard to contemplate that. But, I mean, at that time, as you know, I mean, it was communism versus capitalism. We didn't know the Soviet Union back then. It was just this black and white image on the newsreels at, you know, at the 6 o'clock and the 11 o'clock news. And all we knew is that they were to be feared because they were behind that Iron Curtain in the Eastern Bloc countries, and their way of life was different than ours, and all of that kind of political and cultural pressures and differences came into play into the feelings and the mindsets of the players as this series evolved. And I think because of all that, you know, this was the first of its kind because it was our best versus their best. We'd never had the NHLers play them before. And then you have that undercurrent of all that politics and culture. You'll never reproduce that again. And that's why I suppose that we're talking about this series 50 years later, because not just because of how it unfolded and ended, but because of, again, the significance it had on so many levels. Ness?
Scott, I was very surprised that there was 3,000 fans in Moscow. I didn't think there was any there from Canada.
No, there were 3,000, and they all had to book before the series. And, you know, the series was advertised by most that it was going to be a kind of an exhibition-friendly series, and Canadians were going to walk over all the games and win by lopsided scores. And, of course, that didn't unfold quite that way. And so it became a little more magical for those 3,000 fans with all the drama that unfolded, and especially I'm sure they went over there really wondering what they were doing when the Canadians only won one of those first four games and not expecting to see what they did with the amazing comeback. But, you know, the players to this day talk about how important those 3,000 fans were. And, I mentioned that Esposito speech earlier after the Vancouver game and how that kind of changed the mindset of the fans. And when the players got to Moscow, you know, when they left Canada, they felt like they were abandoned by the country. And when they got to Moscow, they felt like they were embraced by it, because there were like 10,000, 12,000 telegrams and postcards and letters of support. And the trainers pasted them on the wall out in the hallway outside the dressing room so they could see them all. And then those fans were there. And, you know, game five, as you recall, they were ahead in that game, feeling pretty good about themselves finally. Their conditioning was kicking in. They were coming together as a team, but they blew the lead and they lost. And as they were leaving the ice, you know, dejected, obviously, the 3,000 fans were all together, seated together at the end of the rink where they left, and they stood and cheered, a standing ovation. And the players said, as they say, remember to this day how impactful that was. They looked and they thought, these people really are behind us, the country's behind us, and we're playing for the country. And that was just an emotional charge for that team at a time when they really needed to feel a little bit of support.
Scott, sometimes we forget there was another team that was part of this series. They were the Soviet Union. And interestingly enough, there's been some momentum to get the Soviet side of the series. And Paul Patsko, I know a gentleman that you know that's
yep.
Been a friend of our show, did a wonderful session on his hockey time machine where he actually had some of the Russian players, Mikhailov and Yakushev. I think Trechak was the third. I can't remember. And
yes, he was. I watched that show.
Yeah, and we had Alex Braverman on the show as well at one point. But I want to get your perspective. The Russians, for them, although they may have lost on the ice, this was a tremendous victory for them in a lot of ways. And their players, that series to this day hasn't been forgotten in Russia either, has it, Scott?
No, it hasn't. And, in the eyes of, many of the players, they look at that series as being a win-win. You know, Canada was expected to win, and they did. They didn't do it in quite the way that everybody in Canada had envisioned, but they found a way to get it done and win in dramatic style. But I think even after game one, the Soviets were winners because they shocked the world, the hockey world themselves, and all of Canada by going into Montreal and winning that game 7-3. And the mission of that series was to prove that they could play at the same level as Canada's best, as the best NHLers. And they did that. And, of course, they did that throughout the series. And as those players talked about, and I've talked to many players over the years with the Soviets, is that, you know, there's still bitter disappointment in that they didn't get the job done and that they lost those final three games. But they're still immensely proud that that they did show the world how good they were and that they could play with the absolute best, and they were amongst the very best. And, you know, over the years, there's been anniversary celebrations, and the Soviets have, the Russians as they evolved, invited the Canadian team over en masse to be a part of them, and they've celebrated the anniversaries. And the Canadian players, and they mention it in the book, is they say that you know, it felt like they won the series and not us, but it was a, you know, there was so much pride on the line for them as well. So disappointment in the outcome, but satisfaction and in what they accomplished along the way.
Yes,
is there any animosity towards the players that left the team, Scott?
Sorry, the phone broke up there.
Any animosity, Scott, towards the players that left the team? Is that still lingering? Is that still fair? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't think there's, you know, there's no animosity. I mean, at the time, you know, they invited the 35 players to camp because they had to have that many, and it was an unwieldy number. And they'd promised everyone they were going to play because they thought the series was going to be a lark. And obviously once that wasn't the case, then Harry Sinden and John Ferguson, the coaches, realized very quickly that they were going to have to pare the roster down, and this group had to become a team in a hurry. And, you know, when they were in Sweden prior to moving into Moscow, they decided that they were going to pare that group down to 20, 21 players that were going to play those final four games, for better or worse, and try to come together as a team. And so that left a lot of guys standing on the sidelines. And, you know, you have to appreciate that all those players have been stars all their lives, and they've never been on the outside looking in. They've never been a healthy scratch for a game, never mind a series of that magnitude. And great players want to be on the ice to make a difference. They don't want to be watching. They want to be in there, and no matter how difficult it is. And so that was really, really hard for all of those guys that didn't get to play down the stretch. And so, you know, when they told the team that that was the direction they were going, they left the door open for anyone to go if they wanted, and no hard feelings. And, you know, as Vic Hadfield says in the story, and Vic's been, you know, crucified over the years for leaving the team, is Eagleson was supposed to explain that to the media, and that didn't happen. And so those players really got roasted afterwards, and unfairly in many regards.
We're talking to Scott Morrison. The book is 1972, The Series That Changed Hockey Forever. Please, please pick up a copy of this book. It's wonderful writing. Extend our welcome here, Scott, just a couple of more minutes, with your permission, not much longer. We actually got the opportunity to interview Paul Henderson and Phil Esposito back on September 28th, 2014. And there was something distinctly remember from that, and you picked up on the book, and you did a wonderful job with it. Is Paul Henderson... he found an unusual way to get on the ice. It wasn't the coach that put him on the ice. It wasn't Harry Sinden right in the last minute. As Pete Mihalovic was coming to the bench, Paul Henderson yelled at him to get off the ice. And Paul said that's the only time in his career that he ever yelled at a player to get off the ice. Tell us all about that story, Scott.
So they're in the final minute and change when they put the Esposito line out with to take a face-off on their end. And then Harry had told the Henderson line with Ellis and Clark that they, if something happened, they would be next up. And yeah, Paul, you know, that line was out. It was actually over a minute and a half, actually. And anyway, Paul just had this feeling that after what had happened in the previous two games of scoring the game-winning goal and, of course, the spectacular goal that he'd scored in Game 7, he had this feeling that he had something special left in him and he had to be out on the ice. And so he did yell at Pete Mihaljevic to come off the ice. And Pete says that he was coming anyway, but he said, Ron Ellis said, I've never heard a guy call another player off the ice the way he did in those circumstances. And Paul jumped on and he made a beeline towards the goal, and Cornwallier had the puck on that one wall and threw it across, and Paul just missed it. And then we all know Foster Hewitt and Bob Cole told us how it all unfolded after that. But Paul just had a feeling in both the games, those final games, that he had something special in him.
Certainly, when you talk about something special, the ironic part about that, in today's world, Paul Henderson wouldn't have even been playing in Game 6, 7, and 8 because he had a concussion in Game 5, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely, he did. And he was taken to the dress. He slammed into the boards, backwards into the boards, and slumped over, and they got him off the ice, and they took him to the dressing room, and the doctors and Harry Sinden said to him, he said, take your gear off, you're done. And he begged them he said the words, I don't want it to end this way. It can't end this way. You've got to let me go back out. And they did. And that would not have happened today, that's for sure. And the other interesting story of that Game 5 is when it was over, Phil Esposito was having heart palpitations and feeling off. And they quietly took him, and it wasn't reported at the time, they quietly took him to a hospital with Canadian doctors, looked at, they did various tests and whatnot, and all they determined, and I forget the medical term for it, but is that he does have an enlarged big heart. And, of course, that big heart shone through for all of Canada on those final three games. But can you imagine how different history might have been had both of those guys been out of the series after that game?
Scott, we've only got about a minute and a half left to just leave it off with this. The book is 1972, The Series That Changed Hockey Forever. Scott, what's the lingering message of the 1972 team?
Well, the message is, and there's a great comment that was made by John Ferguson Jr. He's been invited to the celebrations over the years because his father was such a big part of the team, of course, and he's heard all the stories and lived through it in his own way. But John used the phrase that you can't teach Canadian, and he was watching the World Junior Series at the time when the Canadian juniors came back to ironically beat the Russian juniors and win a gold medal, and he said, you can't teach Canadian. And I think that's the message that came through in that series, that there's something special about us in hockey and the Canadian mindset of playing that game, and it really shone through in that series.
I've never heard it expressed that way, but thank you so much. I don't think it could be captured any more perfectly. Scott, Naz and I always love going down memory lane when we talk about the 1972 series. There'll be lots of opportunities to do that between now and September 28th, 2022. Thank you so much for coming on this morning. Thank you so much for the book. It was a treat for me to read it, to relive some of those moments. It means so much to our generation, and I don't think anybody could have done it better than you've done it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you both for having me, and thank you for those very, very kind words. Much appreciated.
Our pleasure. Scott Morrison. Naz, 72. We're going to have a lot of opportunities to continue talking about that. We had an opportunity over the years to talk to quite a few members of that team. We've talked to Cornway, Ellis Stapleton, Pat Stapleton, managed to talk to him just before he passed away in that great, great show we did on September 28, 2014, which I went on and listened to last night with Paul Henderson and Phil on the same show. What great memories, Naz.
Absolutely.
On that note, once again, Naz, I always give you the final word.
Goalies go. By Sunday of next week, we'll know if they won or lost.
Well, hopefully we've won. To our listeners, thanks so much for listening in. Have a fantastic week. Thank you.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.